Hello and welcome to Future Projections. This is episode 198 of the show. I'm Carlos Colazo, joined by Ben Badler as always. What's going on, Ben? How you doing?
I need a little action, Carlos. The MLB draft signing deadline is coming up on, what's it, Monday at 5 o'clock p.m. Eastern time.
July 27th. Yep.
It's kind of boring. Like everybody's just gonna sign. There's no whispers of anybody. There's no like Angel Cervantes or Chris Lavones. I don't know. I need you to send out a tweet saying Derek Curiel's not gonna sign or Tyler Spangler or something. Give me some action here.
Yeah, I was about to ask. Do you prefer when we have surprise non-signings? I kind of want a straightforward, have everyone sign, no surprises. It is funny though how regularly we are asked, like, is this player going to sign? Is this player going to sign? Do we have enough pool space for this player? And it's kind of always funny to me too, because we'll tweet out, we'll get deals. We publish them on the draft database. If you're listening to this podcast, you've probably been following along and kind of know the process. But as we get the official deals, we put them out there. And I think it's kind of funny that everyone who's a fan of their own team is there is specific team trackers, and people are trying to figure out like how much bonus money they have left, if everyone's going to be signed. Whereas like for 90% of teams, the process is you kind of know the range and the amount of money that all your players are signing for, like right after the draft happens, and signing the players is much more of a formality. Make sure you're going through the physical and everything's good to go. But the teams and the players kind of know what the deals are immediately, and often players have already signed and we're just waiting on the official deals to come through, or we're waiting on the physicals to happen. But for me, the 2 weeks after the draft have become just like an accounting process more than any extreme intrigue, although it is always interesting to see when players sign for significantly more, significantly less than you thought they would or expected they would. I guess that's interesting to follow, but I'm never, part of this is probably just like not being a fan of a particular team and therefore like worried about whether or not the exciting players are going to get signed. But it's mostly like, hey, like trying to get all that information out to people as soon as we have it. So
all I heard was you said Anthony Murphy flipped from LSU to Miami because he heard Derek Curiel might not sign and he's going back to LSU. Is that,
oh my gosh,
did I hear that right?
Are we putting narratives out there, Ben? No. What are we doing? LSU has had a lot of players flip, it seems like, just purely because of the volume of players getting to campus. Guys are flipping to make sure they actually get a chance to play, which is good.
Well, and yeah, I would say they are among a handful of teams that have very high volume recruiting classes, right, as well. So when you have only so many roster spots and you have 20 something commits, mm-hmm, in your class, and also you're, you know, those teams that are heavy on the volume of incoming freshmen, mm-hmm, in their classes also are hitting the transfer portal pretty hard, yep, typically. So I don't know, you can do some basic mathematics there, and if you're any good at addition and subtraction, realize kind of the plan of a lot of these schools is, all right, we'll have these big classes, and then all right, we'll take the best of the best in, and maybe you lose a couple guys here or there that you'd like to have still. But
it does feel a bit cutthroat, but if you've got the biggest programs in the country, you can kind of afford to do that and then pick and choose which guys you want to come to campus, or at least give the players who maybe won't be getting a ton of playing time a heads up to allow them to get into a better situation. You know, two of the players who they had who are no longer going to LSU, CJ Weinstein, now going to UCLA, and Anthony Murphy, who you just said, who's going to Miami. Those are two of my personal favorites, I'd say, after like the top 100 range of the 2026 draft class. So I'll be really intrigued to see what those players do. I like them for very different reasons.
They're very different players, yes.
Right.
They're not one flavor of player other than being from Southern California.
Yeah, I can't be tied down to one specific profile, Ben. There's a variety of flavors of prospect that...
And draft-eligible sophomores in a couple of years, so...
Oh, they're both draft-eligible sophomores? Okay.
Well, I think that's also part of... Like if you're a draft-eligible sophomore, like, right, which basically means you're 19 at the time of the draft, so, like, you're on the older end of the high school class, there's some more urgency to get on the field quickly, because if you don't play... True. As a freshman,
you don't want just one year of track record, yeah.
Or you just you also want to go somewhere where you know you're going to get on the field that second year too. So, yeah,
College sophomore eligibility could change if the MLBPA gets their way, at least,
Or if MLB gets its way.
Yeah, they both wanted sophomore eligibility, and I prefer MLBPA.
Different reasons. Yeah,
I prefer the rationale and the overall proposal of the Players Association that they had. Why don't we just go ahead and get into that now? I know we had that kind of queued up to talk about on today's episode, but the Players Association did offer up a draft counter proposal. We can go point by point and talk through it, but one of the items was that all college sophomores would be draft eligible. At the moment, the current system is we get a handful of draft eligible sophomores. Any sophomores who are 21 by July 31st or August 1st of that draft year, those players are eligible. Like you said, Ben, this was also an MLB's proposal, but that was tied to removing high school players overall. So the MLBPA system would create a much wider universe of eligible players. What are your thoughts on tacking that onto basically the current system? I would say the MLBPA's proposal in general did seem to be much more of kind of tweaking the current system. It did not seem as extreme of a shakeup as MLB's proposal did. The bonus pool system would remain. MLB proposed hard slotting. There are some other small incentives for smaller revenue teams. The draft date moving back from July to June. Basically, everyone in baseball, I'm sure, loved seeing that. And there was some draft pick trading involved as well, which seems to be more and more popular across the board, regardless of who you talk to. So I guess we'll just open it up to chat about this potential draft system. What are your thoughts? What were your gut reactions to it?
I think both sides are kind of full of it to a certain extent. Like, they're putting out these things, these proposals, and there's some merit or some truth behind what they're saying or what they're proposing or their stated goals. But MLB wants to ban high school players from the draft and then say, okay, well, we'll let sophomores be eligible, college sophomores be eligible. And the reason they don't want high school players in the draft, at least in part, is because they don't want players getting to become both the salary arbitration and to ultimately major league free agency at a younger age, because that drives up prices for them on the free agent market. If you're hitting free agency when you're 26, 27, it's a lot different than if you're becoming a major league free agent when you're 29, 30, going into the decline phase of your career. Whereas the union wants all sophomores eligible so that they can get to free agency, get to the major leagues earlier, and get to free agency younger. On the sophomore part, I mean, they proposed it, like you said, tied to different things. MLB is trying to tie it to the banning of high school players from the draft, and the Players Association is saying, okay, we agree with the sophomore part. We'll keep the high school players though.
Right. Right.
That's interesting. I like the idea of having more players being eligible for the draft.
Right.
It would,
I'm sure college coaches would hate that.
Yeah, the college coaches, if you're just a college baseball fan, I'm sure you don't like that idea. Like, you don't want to lose players after just 2 years.
The current,
but that's not really the concern of either side here.
Yeah, the current system seems to be the best kind of blending of both worlds if you're a college fan and a pro fan. Like, in the NBA system, you can't go directly out of high school anymore, which leads to a lot of one and dones, which I know college basketball fans really hate, because you get one elite player, you get them on campus for 1 year, then they're gone. There's a lot of turnover. In the NFL, you don't have any high school players going, obviously. What is their eligibility? Is every player eligible whenever after college? You have to be a certain
age.
You're
asking the wrong guy, dude. I don't know.
Yeah. So I think there is a nice nuance to the system we have currently, because the elite high school players can go directly. And if you go to college, there is some commitment of, like, hey, you're going to be there for a few years. I'm not opposed to like just universal eligibility for players in the draft. I think obviously that'd be the most beneficial for the players. You can go to school 1 year, and let's say you have a, let's say you're Drew Burris and you have your breakout season at Georgia Tech. I can't imagine teams wouldn't have been really excited to draft him after seeing what he did his freshman season. I don't know if there are any other like Kumar Rocker, maybe after he got to campus and what he did at Duke, or Vanderbilt, excuse me, his freshman season. I think that would be interesting as well. You would have a lot of different profiles. You'd have different track records. I think it would make the draft more interesting in terms of like the ramifications for college baseball, or the cost that maybe owners would have to think about in that system where you're getting players, younger college players, or maybe you're moving quickly, you're getting to the majors at a young age. They clearly don't want that to happen. But I would be open to all sorts of eligibility for college players in a draft system. I don't think there's anything inherently correct about our current system. I just do. I think the high school thing for me is more key than anything. But
There is a question of like, why should only older high school players, or I guess now that older college players for their class, why do they get to be draft eligible when somebody who was born 5 months later isn't draft
right.
eligible, right? Like, why does Derek Curiel get to be draft eligible, but somebody like Brendan Lawson or Landon Harrison or whoever has to wait another
Right.
year? Like, they're in the same high school class, they go to college the same year. Why does one have to wait? Just, oh, you're older, so you get to go earlier. I don't know. I don't know. I also don't know like what the genesis of that rule is in terms of like, okay, why are we doing that? So I think that is like a fair point to say, okay, well, if we're going to make some sophomores eligible, why not make all sophomores eligible? I think MLB is going to be opposed to it for different reasons, one of which it also just it gives more leverage to players because, okay, yeah, if you wanted to draft Rock Chalowski 1-1 and you're the Nationals in 2025, like he's probably going to go out and sign there anyway, right? And you mentioned Drew Burris, but what about his teammate Von Lackey? Like, where would Von Lackey, like, he wasn't no top three overall pick,
No.
Von Lackey.
And if you're talking about like throwing him into last year's class too, in addition to like he hasn't broken out yet, he's competing with a different set of players, like how that it makes every class deeper inherently because you're just dealing with a wider group of players. So would he have been a second rounder? Would he have been a third
At least to
rounder?
start, it would be deeper, but like, for this year, there would be no Rock Chalowski in
Right.
the
At the
draft this year. A
beginning
lot
would
of
be
these
good. A
guys
lot of
would have
those guys would have moved
gone.
out. Drew Burris would have been gone 2 years ago, potentially. Yeah. I think from a, well, the one thing I would like best about this proposal and MLB's proposal is it would remove the tracking down players' DOB and trying to make sure you know all of the sophomores who actually are eligible. Because every year there are a handful of players who, like, teams are kind of surprised to find out they're eligible. And if it's just, hey, all sophomores are eligible regardless of DOB, it certainly makes it easier to track who is actually eligible for the draft. And the fact that it is even like in question or difficult to figure out if you don't have a player's date of birth, which does happen at times, I think it's kind of crazy. That's a very minor nitpick, but I do like just how clean it would be if it's just like, hey, and like you said, it doesn't matter when you were born, sophomore eligibility across the board. I think it'd be really interesting from my perspective.
What about freshmen?
Yeah, I
What if
mean,
they said
once
you open it
you're
up to anybody? Like, there is
same
like
thing, yeah.
some thought experiment where you could say, okay, what if, you could say college freshmen, you could open it up to even like high school underclassmen to an
Yeah, that
extent,
seems
right? And just say,
crazy.
like, yeah, it is crazy, but just as a thought experiment, what would the draft look like if you could just draft
Right.
anybody anytime? Like,
Dylan
no
Seward
matter,
3 years
yeah,
ago.
if there's some high school freshman or sophomore, I mean, look, teams sign, well, they're officially signing Latin American players at 16. They're obviously reaching agreements when they're like
Right.
13 or 12 sometimes now.
Well, even for
So
the
I'm
high
not.
school players, it does seem like the limitation there is like MLB has tried to ensure that even for reclassifications, like you're finishing your high school
Right. Yeah.
diploma,
I
you're
just mean
making
as an
sure you're
experiment.
finishing your education. I think that would be if you're talking about like universal draft eligibility for the high schoolers, you start to lose me a little bit. I think it would be a little bit chaotic. But I do think, like, for college players, if everyone is eligible, I think that'd make the draft a lot more interesting, a lot more fun. I think there would be players like Dylan Cruz, maybe like Rock Chalowski, like Kamar Rocker, Jack Leiter. Although then it makes me kind of – I kind of would think through, like, the player rationale, because sometimes players just don't get their number. Is it purely, hey, you don't get your number, so you're going to college now? Or once you're in college, it's like, hey, I really value the education. I mean, most of these guys are signing after 3 years. Some of them will have advanced academic schedules, so they'll graduate early, or it'll be the case where they only have to take a few more classes and they can get it done. I imagine for the elite athletes and players, that wouldn't be a factor. If you think you're a first-round talent out of high school, you don't get paid, you go to college, you kind of prove it, and then you're a first-round talent in the immediate next year's class, I don't think the education would be too much of a limiting factor if you're going to have a chance to get $5 million and sign. I think it would really only be a negative for college baseball fans specifically and college coaches, because obviously if you get a Rock Chalowski to campus, you want to have him there for 3 years. If you get a Derek Curiel to campus, you want to have him as long as you possibly can. I'm sure Jay Johnson and LSU would love to just say, hey, no, just juniors. Like, if we get you to campus, we want you for 3 years.
I'm sure they would say senior, yeah.
right. We want him for as long as you can get. So I do think from the player perspective, from the draft interest perspective, my perspective covering a draft, I think it would be a lot of fun. No one so far has proposed universal eligibility for all college players, but it's definitely something we've talked about internally at BA as something that would be cool to see. Like, what would have happened to Dylan Cruz the year he got to campus?
So what if this ends up being the compromise between MLB and the PA? The MLB says, all right, we'll ban all high school draft picks, but we'll make any college baseball player draft eligible. So you can be a draft eligible after your freshman year. So if Kevin McGonigal and Colt Emerson get to Auburn and Connor Griffin goes to LSU and Max Clark is at Vanderbilt, all these guys, you can't draft them as high school seniors, but you can draft them as freshmen. So MLB then, you know, you're probably could cut another minor league team still, or level of the minor leagues at that point. You bring in all these players and you can evaluate them all in a college environment. And all right, now at least the Players Association gets to say, well, okay, like those guys will still get drafted. Like the elite guys will still get drafted as freshmen. And now we're getting everybody eligible earlier in their collegiate career.
I think it'd still be a hard no from the MLBPA side, because you could say you're getting everyone eligible earlier, but in reality, you are delaying everyone's eligibility later. If no high school players have the opportunity to sign immediately, you're just moving the start date of their pro career at least a year later. Even if you can, like, rationalize a sophomore or college freshman getting to their second draft sooner, I don't think that it's going to make up for the elite high school players that you're just removing from the process, who are getting significant bonuses, who are the Connor Griffins and Kevin McGonigals, who are getting a chance to get to free agency at elite youth levels and even sign for these big contract extensions. I would imagine that would be a no-go. I don't know that opening up all years of college baseball would be worth losing the elite high school players, which do kind of form the biggest bonuses in Major League Baseball. Like, if you look at the top 10 bonuses signed, they're like 9 out of 10 are high school or international players.
And I think those players would still, if you get drafted as a freshman out of college, I still think you'd move pretty quickly through the minor league.
You would move quickly, but you were just a year later. Like, it's going to be slower.
Would it be a year later, or would you just start? Probably. You would probably start higher up in the minor leagues than you otherwise would have as a freshman.
Same argument for high school versus college players now, though, and we just don't see that happening. I do think there's something to, like purely when you get into pro baseball, if you get there earlier, you just have a chance to move so much more aggressively, so much quicker.
I also think the Players Association probably wouldn't want to just open the door to banning high school players altogether, and then MLB in a later negotiation being like, you know what, we're actually going to make it everyone's eligible as a college sophomore instead of a freshman, and there's no going back.
Well, the one interesting thing too is like, if you don't allow high school players domestically to go straight into pro ball, but you can still sign international players, like there's that odd disconnect there, where you're signing players at 17 years old from Latin America, but you have to wait until you're 19 and coming out of college. I still think like just forcing players to go to college seems like such a misstep from the MLB PA perspective. Like there are so many players in this year's class who were just signed out of high school, who have no interest in going to college. And I just don't think forcing them to go that route makes a lot of sense for a lot of reasons. But I don't know. I'm much more interested in the changing the rules of the college eligibility without using high school players as a hostage in those negotiations, I'll say.
So you would be for all sophomores being eligible?
Yeah. I can't really express a negative to that from my perspective.
Todd, Father, are you hitting some games this summer? What's the deal?
Oh, of course, and it's real simple. Scotty Braun, you know how it is. You go to SeatGeek and you can find any deal you want in any section you want. Even if the game sold out, go to SeatGeek and you'll find something that you love, affordable for your family, that you can enjoy anywhere, anytime, at any ballpark and stadium you want. Enjoy it. It's the best opportunity to go see a beautiful game of baseball.
And that's the thing. You can be so last minute. SeatGeek is the official ticket marketplace of Major League Baseball. They have you covered for all of your baseball ticket needs the entire summer. They also have over 70,000 events on SeatGeek. That includes concerts, festivals, all kinds of sporting events. So go check it out right now, FT fam. The code is Territory10 for 10% off your next set of MLB tickets at SeatGeek. That's 10% off with promo code Territory10. Make sure you click the link in the description to download the app, and then the code automatically is added to your account so you can use it later.
Is there an obvious negative we're missing here from that?
I think if you're an MLB team, you could say, all right, well, we want more information on these players to make better decisions. And if we have more years of information on these guys, we're going to then be able to make better decisions. And there's a lot of guys. Look, like there are very few freshmen at the SEC or even in the ACC two level and other schools too, who actually get on the field and are getting regular playing time. So hopefully they do by the time they're sophomores. But even then, you see guys take big jumps from their sophomore year to their junior year, or you just get more information on, you know, pitchers can this guy stay healthy for multiple seasons, especially in a starter workload? Like guys in college who otherwise would be starting pitchers, had they been drafted out of high school and gone straight to the minor leagues, are starting in the bullpen in college for their first year, maybe their first 2 years, and then they transition to a starting role their junior year or maybe their sophomore year, just because a combination of their present ability to get outs in a league like the SEC or the ACC and just the guys that are ahead of them in the rotation where they're playing. So I think from MLB's perspective, they said, well, setting aside like the free agency stuff, we can make better decisions on these guys if we have another year to evaluate these guys in college.
Well, I still, as you said that, what I like about this is it doesn't force anyone to draft the sophomores. Like if you are a team that feels like you need more information, a longer track record, the bulk of your draft could be the juniors that got passed over, and it would allow more aggressive teams who either are more confident in what they know about a player now or want to be more aggressive in their scouting decisions, maybe more risk tolerant, they could take the shots on those sophomores. But I'm sure MLB teams would be like, hey, we want an even playing field here. We don't want anyone getting too many advantages. I just don't think, I can't imagine there would be teams that are just going to pass on all the exciting sophomores because they want one more year. If you wait one more year in a world where sophomores are all eligible, the more aggressive teams, I think, are going to get the talented players, and you're not going to have a chance to see them perform for another year. So that would lead to some pretty extreme differences in just risk tolerance and upside potential, I think, at the college level, which as I'm talking through it, would be even more interesting. Like if we did have this scenario where there were teams that took a shot on like 1 year of a breakout performance from a player, how does that change the makeup of your draft class compared to teams who really value that longer track record? I don't know. It would be interesting. It would be a whole new draft universe to think through.
What about on the slotting system? I know MLB was saying let's go to a hard slotting system and also slash the overall bonuses as well. Mm-hmm. And the Players Association is saying no, let's keep the kind of these mm-hmm. I would call them flexible bonus slots, where you know you have your overall bonus pools that are comprised of your slots from the top 10 rounds, and you can give a guy with $1 million slot $500 or whatever, and then use that excess money to, or excess slot value to pay other guys elsewhere in the draft.
Yeah, I feel like it is hard to envision a draft scenario where teams can trade picks and it's not a hard slotting system. Maybe in my mind, I've kind of coupled those together because I do think pick trading and hard slotting make sense together. Maybe it's because MLB kind of propose it that way first. I'm not opposed to pick trading with a soft slotting system, but I do think there is an...
I mean, we have pick trading now for a select group of picks.
Correct.
And it seems to work fine to me.
Yeah, I do think it would work. I think it would work fine. I'm not against it. There is something, an element of accessibility to the draft that comes from a hard slotting system that I do think would be beneficial for fans of the game, for fans of the draft.
Definitely.
And I think with a hard slotting system, with pick trading, it still allows teams to kind of be creative in how you want to work the board. Maybe not to the same extent, because you can't do it with every single pick, theoretically. I don't know if I feel like a player losing the ability to negotiate an above slot or an underslot deal moves the needle enough for me, because I do just think how players get selected would change so significantly. In every other draft, the best players are going at the top of the board and getting paid the most money. We would see that more regularly in an MLB system that's hard slotted. But I also wonder, like, if you can't get a Jensen Hirschkorn in the third round and sign him for an overslot deal, would that mean teams take Jensen Hirschkorn earlier? I think in reality, what might happen is teams are still going to be skeptical to take that profile with their first pick. And because Jensen can't get paid $4 million later in the draft, if someone doesn't take a shot on him in the first round, he's just going to school.
So it depends who's picking where.
Exactly. So like
the Braves want Jensen, I guess maybe a bad example because they do have the 26th pick this year. So they could have taken him there. But if you're, you know, if it's another team, let's say they didn't have that pick or it was later in the draft and the slot value there was less than, what did he get? Was it 3 or 4 million?
$4 million with the signing consensus.
For Hirschkorn. So like pretty quickly, like there's not that many picks in the draft that have a $4 million slot attached to it. So if you make those hard slots.
Right. I'll pull up this year's slots and actually tell you when we get below $4 million in slot value, because I think it's probably like around pick 20 is where that happens.
Yeah, if there's a team like the Braves that wants to pay Jensen Hirschkorn $4 million, it's good for the Braves, it's good for the team, and it's good for the player, for both sides to have that freedom and flexibility to maneuver their bonus pool around and pay him later in the draft if they want to.
Just for some context here, as you're going, pick 22 this year came with a slot just over $4 million, and pick 23 was a slot just under $4 million. So in this system, for Jensen Hirschkorn to get that similar bonus, he would have to be a top 22 overall pick. I just think even the teams willing to take those players, part of their willingness to take them has a lot to do with feeling like you can take an AJ Gracia or a Carter Beck up top and then get the high school pitcher. So I think what's most likely in a hard slotting scenario is even fewer high school pitchers get selected. I don't know if that would be true of other high school profiles that tend to get the overslot deals. Like, would it be true for hitters? Would guys like Martin Chalar be less likely to get signed, or would they just go earlier? I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think high school. I mean, we already don't really see high school pitchers going in the first round. Anyway, what was it? It was this year, Borthwick to the Padres.
Gio Rojas to the Rangers.
Gio Rojas. Yeah. So two.
Yeah.
And last year it was also two. And one of them was Seth Hernandez, who's just like in a different level of talent than most high school pitchers we've ever seen in the last several years.
Right.
So, yeah, I agree. I think the high school pitchers would get hammered by that, but then maybe it pushes you to take high school players earlier in the draft, and it would probably lean toward hitters, and maybe there'd be like a run on pitchers in like the second, third-ish round, depending on what the signability of certain players.
Carson Bowman was selected 29th, technically not a first round pick, but if you want to include him top 30, I think that is defensible.
Yeah. So, but because otherwise, once you get past, a lot of high school players want to sign for $1 million or more. And if, especially the top guys, even some of the not top guys want that too. And once you get past the first few rounds, okay, like that's where the slots stop being worth that. But if you have the flexibility in your bonus pool to overslot or a guy later in the draft, you can do that now, and you can take a little bit more time to wait and pick your spot for, you know, the Guardians with a guy like a Savion Sims, that kind of thing. But if you go to hard slot pretty quickly, well, dries up for high school players who are high value players.
Yep, absolutely. Okay, one other element of this was granting lower revenue clubs the flexibility to increase their signing bonus pools while providing automatic pool increases to such clubs that qualify for the playoffs. What were your thoughts on this one? It feels like just adding more money from the Players Association side, which makes sense. I'm not entirely in love with like how baseball seems to be basically having different rule sets for teams that spend a lot of money, big market clubs, small market clubs. I personally don't like that. I wish the rules were just the same for everyone. If you choose to spend, that's on you. If you don't choose to spend, that's also on you. What are your thoughts on that little wrinkle of the MLBPA proposal here?
I thought that was a very clever proposal from the Players Association. They want teams to spend more money and are disguising it as competitive balance, which is what MLB does when they do it.
Yeah.
Well, it's what they do too. They MLB saying, "Oh, well, we want
with,
X,
with
Y."
The opposite rationale. They want less spending for competitive, quote, competitive balance, and the MLPA wants more spending for, quote, competitive balance.
Yeah, the owners are talking about competitive balance and the revenue mismatches, and especially when it comes to major league payroll, and they talk about it in the draft too. To a certain extent, right? Like, they do talk about it in the draft. They say, "Oh, that's why we have the draft set up the way it is, competitive balance." When a big reason they have the draft in the first place is not to distribute talent for competitive balance reasons. It's okay, we can have a draft, and therefore we can contain our costs.
Purely to cap the bonuses, right?
Yeah, on bonuses, right? So that's a big part of why they have the bonus pool system as it is right now. It's not for balancing talent. It's all right, we can contain our labor costs. Whereas the MLBPA is saying, yeah, we agree, we want competitive balance. Therefore, these small revenue teams should be able to spend more money, on our players. I don't know.
I think it's less clever than you think it is. I think it's pretty obvious what they're doing, but...
I haven't seen them propose something like that before, basically using MLB's language and turning it on them in this way, at least.
So you're saying
the
MLBPA
context is
getting savvier, or at least caring more about the draft for the first time.
In the past,
they have used the draft as a bargaining chip, and this year they actually seem to be invested in what the draft looks like, which is a step forward for them.
I wouldn't necessarily go that far. I mean, I think this is all part of a negotiation, and then what they actually agree to, we'll see in the end. They could cave on all of this. They can make, look, I think both of these sides are puffing their chests and
as you say this,
making
dude,
these grandiose proposals. And
we've spent so much time discussing all these proposals. And like you said, we'll see what they actually do. we're not even at the end of the season. We haven't even had real negotiations start yet. It's going to be a little depressing to look back on all these podcasts we do, breaking down in depth all these proposals that probably end up going nowhere anyways. So we're purely in thought experiment land, I suppose.
Well, they are on the negotiating table. Like, these ideas could, these are proposals that could come to fruition. Whatever ultimately ends up being the final shape of the rules, these are at least on the table. As far as giving smaller revenue teams more money to spend, I don't know. I don't love the idea. I don't see a need to imbalance the draft more toward the smaller revenue teams. This is also just like a fight among the owners themselves, where like the small, I know they like to say how they're all super united and all this, but like behind the scenes, like the bigger revenue owners are always fighting with the smaller revenue owners, and right, the smaller revenue owners are trying to get more of this kind of stuff in there. So,
I mean, another kind of wrinkle to this, which is the same thing as MLBPA proposed, that teams could overspend their pool by as much as 15% without losing a pick, and wouldn't lose a first round pick unless they go over by more than 20%, which would be a significant increase in pool.
It's not going to happen.
Same thing, just allowing teams to spend more without incurring the penalty that has actually shown to stop teams from spending. Like, the 5% overage has essentially been a hard cap for teams. No team has been willing to sacrifice draft picks. And so MLBPA is looking at it and saying, hey, if we increase the overage limit before you get to those pick penalties, it'll just mean more money going to players. So that's another wrinkle to that. The one that I feel like there is no strong counter to in this proposal, and maybe this is me speaking from my biased position of someone who like has to work the draft, and so the logistics of where the draft takes place are very meaningful to me. But I'm curious to hear if you've heard from anyone who doesn't want the draft to move from July back to June, how it used to be, Ben, because I feel like as soon as that change happened, there was an outcry from essentially anyone who worked in baseball, for teams in the front office, for scouts, for analysts, for agents, for people in the media who cover it, for college baseball, for coaches. Like, no one really loves where the draft is now, except maybe the commissioner's office and anyone who likes tying the draft to the All-Star game. And given kind of some of the flaws in this year's scheduling at the All-Star game, I don't know that there's a reason to be super tied to it, unless we're going to reprioritize the draft at the All-Star game. But what are your thoughts on July to June? Is this a no-brainer that should happen? Or do you think there is a reason to maybe consider keeping it in July? I mean, for me personally, I would really like to spend more time in the summer covering next year's class. And with the overlap, that is the biggest kind of grievance that I have, is splitting time and attention on multiple classes is not ideal. But it just is how it is.
If you asked people who work in scouting departments, in front offices, in baseball operations, when they would prefer to have the draft, they would prefer to have it in June, the way that it used to be. It makes it much more challenging on everybody's schedule to try to juggle multiple classes at once, especially on the high school side. I think it's true as well on the college side. You're trying to cover the Cape, you're trying to cover the college national team, other summer leagues that are going on. But I think there's ways to like split up your scouting coverage and see those guys still in the summer. It's not optimal, but I think it really hurts you on the high school side. So if you ask clubs, those guys who work in for MLB teams, that probably high 90% of people would say, yeah, they would prefer to have it.
I've not heard from someone June. Who wants to have it in July. I would love to know what the rationale would be.
You have not.
Maybe
I know you have not talked to.
I've not talked to every single person.
I was going to say you have not talked to Rob Manfred.
I'm mostly curious, people who work for teams, if there are people who exist who like it in July, please reach out and tell me why. Maybe it's they like the extra month to like really vet hardcore the draft performances. I think that is an advantage of July, because previously in June, sometimes players' full seasons aren't complete. And so I could see wanting to just have some time to look through everyone's full completed season. Maybe there is some confidence that is gained by that period of time where you just get more time with the season ended to go through and vet profiles. That's maybe the only benefit I can think of.
So you do have some cold weather high school players that are still playing. So, all right. And for example, this year, I don't know exactly like when the MLB draft would have been if it had gone to the old calendar, right, in mm-hmm. June.
Yeah.
But like Brody Bamilla, for example, he blew out in his last start Brody of the Bamilla state championship.
Begging for the draft to be June.
No. Well, yeah.
Before he blew out.
Yeah, but then what would have happened? Okay, he starts in the state championship game. He blows out. The Padres just took him with their first round pick. So what happens then? Like, guys are still playing after right. the draft. And you look, obviously, we'd still have that. It would depend on when you do it in the month of June. But it used to be like, what, during super regionals when it was going on? My guess is they would probably try to tie it to Omaha, which is an interesting idea if you do it then. I don't know if like that's in the best interest of college baseball, but
I actually do think it would be very beneficial for college baseball. It's putting a spotlight on college baseball. It would be akin to MLB Network having a college coach to come on and hype up the college baseball game. I think it'd be very,
or is it putting a distraction that focuses Omaha more on the major league game than the college game?
I'm sure teams maybe playing there would say it's a bit of a distraction. We don't want our players focused on the draft. We want them focused on winning this college baseball tournament. But I think for the game of college baseball as a whole, I don't know how it could be anything but a positive, because you are putting the sport on the radar for people who otherwise wouldn't care. So I think it's nothing but a positive for college baseball. You would have to have a really creative argument to convince me that it would be a negative for college baseball. Like, you'd have to, I don't know how you could frame it for me to think that's a negative. I think it'd be selling college baseball.
Would it be a positive for MLB to have it in Omaha, you think?
Which is what
really matters. Like, no disrespect to college baseball. It's just, it's not the negotiation that's going on.
I think it is a positive. If you create a draft that is more watchable, it's a positive, because MLB wants people to watch the draft. They want their product to be popular, like the NFL's draft, like the NBA's draft. They want people to get excited about the young talent coming into their game. So if you could say that it makes people more excited about the draft and where those players are going after the draft, yeah, it would be a win. If it basically was just an ad for college baseball and people didn't care about the drafted players and just started watching college baseball, maybe it would be negative. I don't know.
I think the other, I think the other part that you touched on is, I think you can make the argument that teams can make better decisions if they have that extra month to just digest the information that just came in. Like,
we do this every offseason, right? Like, we've
got
a whole season of minor league baseball. We have all the data coming in. We can, like, take some time to process what happened, think through. Like, nothing is moving constantly, so you're not having to analyze with stuff ongoing. And there is a finality of a season that just makes it easier to compare player to player. Even if it's not the clarity you gain by breaking down one player, it's like, okay, we can line up these five players. They all had a full season. Here's the differences. Here's the pros and cons. I do think there's an element of confidence you can gain by being able to like have that distance from the season.
Then the other part is the draft combine, right? So the draft combine is June 20-ish every year, that week of June. And then the draft is a few weeks later. All right. So if you're having the draft in like early to mid June, let's say early mid June, when do you have the draft combine? Like, how are you going to get players there?
Because if the college baseball season is ongoing, you're not going to get 150, 200 college players to
high school players are still playing there.
Yeah. That becomes a real logistical challenge.
And I think MLB really likes having the draft combine. And it's, they like having that. They like having the draft league as well. There's the Apple, like there's leagues too, where some of these guys are going and raising their stocks in these leagues. It's not, you know, your first round pick or your, I didn't say second round. Elliot LaSalle, though, the Padres hit really well when the Canadian team went through there. So maybe he was already going to go there, but certainly didn't hurt that he was awesome there. So I think there are some benefits that MLB can see to, and look, as a team, as much as it, like if you work for a team, as much as it might suck for your life, maybe, or just your work schedule, yeah, your process, it does give you more time and more information to make decisions on these players.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, anything else you want to talk about?
I guess the other part would just be like the from a college baseball perspective too, is like the transfer portal is such a big one when teams are building rosters. If you do move the draft up earlier, I think that would be, from a college baseball perspective, more, that would be a benefit for college baseball, 100%. Where it's like you're trying to build a roster where you have all this uncertainty as to who is actually coming to school while you're trying to bring in transfers and build out your recruiting. I mean, you have your recruits, but coaches, who's coming to campus?
Right. Currently, coaches are trying to figure out which of their recruits are actually getting to campus, which of their current players are going to be selected and not be on the team. Who do we need to get in the transfer portal? Because if we don't make moves in the transfer portal now, before the draft happens, all the best players are going to be gone. So there's just so much fluidity and movement and uncertainty in who's actually going to be suiting up and putting on your uniform that it is, it seems like such a pain. And it leads, I think it leads to bad, bad incentives for college coaches in how they have to operate, to get their teams together. Like, I don't blame them for what they're doing, but I also don't think it is necessarily the most positive environment for especially high school recruits who are getting squeezed in a lot of ways because of all the uncertainty, either squeezed out of their current classes. And if there was more certainty and like, hey, these are the players who are coming, I think it would make it a lot easier for coaches and for players themselves to make decisions on where they're going to actually be headed to play baseball. If all of that wasn't happening at the same time.
Yeah. What about draft pick trading? It seems like both sides are ready to do it. Maybe MLB is tied it, like you said, to the idea of a hard slotted system, but they at least propose the idea of opening more draft picks to being eligible to be traded. And the Players Association said, yeah, that's cool by us.
Right. They said, permitting clubs to trade draft picks was subject to certain restrictions, I believe is how they worded it. So we don't have clarity on like what exactly MLBPA is thinking with those restrictions, but both sides seem to want to trade picks. Both sides seem to want to limit like what teams are actually able to do in terms of like trading away your entire class or trading multiple first rounders year after year and the timeline of when those pick trades happen. I think both proposals have actually stipulated that the picks have to be traded before the draft takes place, which would be nice to actually know what the draft order is going to be on draft day. But I don't see a real negative to draft pick trading, again, tied to or not tied to hard slotting systems. I just think it is beneficial for the teams. You can be more creative. It maybe lubricates the trade deadline a little bit more. You can get players moved at the major league level. If you just give teams more of their assets, you allow them to be moved in those big league trades. I think that would be, it would make the draft more interesting. It'd make the trade deadline more interesting. It maybe would make the MLB season more interesting, because I do think that could unlock a lot of major league trades that don't happen because there's just not maybe a match for key trade deadline players with teams that maybe just don't have the prospect capital in the farm currently, that maybe trading a first round pick could help make that trade go through. I think it's a way for teams to be aggressive in a draft class if they really like it, or if they're viewing an undervalued demographic or player. It allows teams who maybe really thought Rochelowski was the no doubt number one, if you think he is and other teams have maybe either soured on the profile or don't think there's as much separation, hey, you can now move those picks and go get the players you really like. And I think just from a pure fan perspective, trades are fun, no matter where they happen. So opening the draft up to trades outside of just those competitive balance picks, I think would be kind of a positive for everyone.
Yeah, I like teams having more freedom to make decisions on whether they want to keep the pick, trade the pick, move up in the draft. Not just for for the trade deadline, but also in the offseason, right? Like, there's a lot of trades you can make in the offseason where, yeah, like you said, maybe these teams want to make a deal, but they don't agree on the value of certain prospects, or a team's farm system is really light. It just doesn't match up. But you just move the draft lottery up a little bit earlier in the winter meetings, or you don't even have to do it in the winter meetings. And then, okay, now we know where every pick is in the first round or first. I mean, I guess maybe you could trade. You kind of know what the picks are in like the second round anyway.
I mean, even in the NBA, beyond. Teams trade picks before they even know where they're at. So you could still theoretically trade picks.
Yeah. So you can trade for Yeah. And
you
then
trade
maybe
for future first. And teams are always saying, like, oh, this team, we're expecting them to be good or bad. So we think it'll be a good first round pick. Like, yeah, I don't know, like, what exactly MLB or the PA would, like, what kind of future limitations you would want, but there'd be nothing against, like, say, hey, whatever your second round pick is, you're just going to trade that. Maybe that'd make it a little bit harder because teams would want to know the precise value of a pick, but just more capital to move around. So I think it'd be cool however they did it.
Yeah, I think you'd see, like, trades are good for the game. So let's get,
agreed.
Let's incentivize a way to get more of them.
100%. Like, the fact that they weren't always tradable is kind of weird if you think about it. Like, it's the norm for us now, so we've gotten used to it. But the idea that some picks are allowed to be traded and some picks aren't, there's no real reason for that to be the case. So, yeah, let's do pick trades. At this point, I would be surprised if we didn't have draft pick trading because everyone seems to be on board with it.
I think we should see that. I don't think we're going to see the draft moot earlier in the calendar to June.
I don't have strong thoughts on that. But there seems to be a lot of momentum for the pick trading.
Yeah, I would welcome that.
All right. Any other thoughts on this proposal or anything else, Ben?
I think those are the kind of the big ones from the PA side.
It does seem like kind of the big ones. The most interesting ones to chat about. I'll be curious what our listeners think, if they're fans of this, if they think it's too similar to the current system, if there's anything they don't like, if they hate the idea of sophomore eligibility, if they feel really strongly about what the pool system should be, slotted hard or slotted soft, if teams from small revenue clubs like the idea of being able to get more space, pool space for playoff appearances. Just general thoughts. Always curious to hear what our listeners think about these topics as we're kind of working through them and thinking through them on our end. So if you want to reach out to us, you can email us at futureprojection@baseballamerica.com. The usual socials that are linked in the show notes.
Is there a date that makes the most sense for you? Like a specific time in June? I know you like the June draft. Is there a specific date or like period? Like, would you do the draft if you do it in Omaha? Would you do it during the College World Series? Like, would you do it during the College World Series? Would you move it to like Super Regionals?
I don't know that I have a strong take on like where it should be specifically. I think there are some dates right before the College World Series that could be fun. There are a couple off days there. So maybe drafting ahead of that, so where you're not drafting when anyone's actually on the field playing.
That's not ideal.
Yeah, we've had that. Yeah. We have had that. I think avoiding that is nice. I like the idea of the College World, tying it to the College World Series, because it's something that's been talked about for so long. And so many of the high profile players who are being drafted are playing in that event and playing in the postseason, that I just think it makes a lot of sense to me to do it there and to tie it to something. Because I do think if you're just drafting like it previously happened, just purely in the studio, not connected to anything, there is an artificial nature of the draft that takes a little bit of the life from it, that I do think a live event, a live draft, adds some spice to. And I think inherently you're going to get a lot of people on the ground, if it's tied to Omaha, who are like big baseball fans who would be interested in it. And so I like the idea of making the draft an event in any capacity. And so if Omaha is a path to that, I would be open to trying that out. But I don't.
You probably
feel strongly about it.
You would
also allow me to get to Omaha for the first time ever, which selfishly, great reason.
is the most important thing, right?
Right, yeah.
You'd also have some, I don't know if they would show up to the physical draft set itself, but if you have players who are playing in Omaha, who are going to go in the first round,
yeah,
or I guess first four rounds, the way they do day one now, then you could at least have some players at the draft. I don't know if that's like the most important thing, but so MLB wants players. That.
MLB wants it for whatever reason. I think, honestly, most of the time it's just kind of awkward. I don't think there's any real benefit to the players being in-house, but whatever. If that allows more players to come and attend and watch, sure.
I think the bigger key is you got to do it on a day or structure it in a way where you're saying this is important enough where we are going to not have MLB games, or we're going to have a very limited slate of MLB games.
You would think
going on at the same time.
Yeah, I would prefer that. I mean, we had multiple years where that was the case, and I think it is better. Like, we had people reach out and say, hey, I'm interested in the draft, but I'm not interested enough in the draft to miss my team's like game in the regular season when they're in the hunt for the playoffs. So like
on a Saturday afternoon,
right? Yeah. So that should be a no brainer, but clearly it's not a high priority.
I mean, they could just move it to the day after the All-Star game. I don't know if that would be like ideal for a lot of also people's schedules who work in
the schedule issue
front offices
remain a problem in that, but it wouldn't be significantly worse than it already is. So
we know you could also keep it in the All-Star game location every year. You're just moving it later on the calendar. If you don't do that, I would at least move the futures game to that date. Like, that seems like a no brainer to me. If you're going to keep the draft there and you don't want to move it to that date, fine. Just move the futures game to that date. There's no other games going on. There's no other like sports going on, really. So why are we not playing the futures game? Maybe even make it 9 innings again instead of 7 innings, but at least put it on a day where there's nothing else going on the calendar. That seems like the optimal time for it.
Yeah. And I haven't really watched a futures game in the last 6 years or so, because it's always just when the draft is happening. And I think there are probably other people who want to watch both, want to watch all these things. And the fact that they were kind of tacking them onto each other and burying each other on the calendar with major league games, making it hard to stream or watch on a broadcast with the scheduling, all of that feels like pretty easy own goals to stop doing in the future. But I guess we'll see.
Yeah.
Okay. That might wrap us for today. I think we'll have a regular schedule next week. We're planning to do another mailbag next Tuesday earlier in the week, and then we'll have our regular podcast at the end of the week before we get a briefer hiatus. I'll be out for a few weeks after that, and then hopefully once I'm back from 2 weeks of travel, we'll be back on a normal podcast as follows. So just a little heads up for the pod schedule moving forward. Ben, any closing comments or housekeeping to do here before we get out of here?
No, I think we fixed everything.
Cool. Beautiful. Well, congrats on the new deal that me and Ben have concocted for MLB and MLBPA. You guys are welcome. For Ben, I'm Carlos. We will see you guys next time. So long.